Happy Podcast Day, everybody. The wonderful Tom Ryan is joining me on the podcast today to talk about his debut novel, Keep This to Yourself, which came out last year and is a really great small town murder mystery. I loved it. And also about the books he has coming out this year, which is two. One that comes out in May of this year, When You Get the Chance, with Robin Stevenson. And in fall, I Hope You're Listening, which is a really another cool murder mystery that also includes podcasts. So that's super fun. Tom is going to answer all the cool questions about querying and his journey to being published. So make sure you listen to all of that and show him some love and check out his book, Keep This to Yourself, which is out now. Can you tell us about your novel, Keep This to Yourself?
Sure. Well, Keep This to Yourself is my most recent young adult novel. I've written two YA novels and a few middle grades and a picture book in the past, but this is my first mystery thriller.
Yeah.
And it's the story of a small town called Camera Cove. And a year before the novel begins, a serial killer kind of caused havoc throughout this coastal, quiet, touristy little town in Maine. And one of the victims of the serial killer was a 17-year-old boy named Connor. And a year after his death, one of his best friends, Mac Bell, finds a clue, actually a note from Connor that indicates that at the time of his death, Connor was on the hunt for the killer himself. And so Mac feels a lot of guilt that he missed this note and decides to start digging into the unsolved murders himself. And things kind of go from there.
It's so good. I read it, and I think I read it in just a couple days because it has everything I love. Small, creepy towns and serial killers, unsolved murders. It was pretty good.
Oh, do you know what? It has stuff that I love, too, which means it was a really fun book to write. I mean, frustrating at times, but I love creepy small towns. I grew up in a small town that I wouldn't call it creepy, but I just love that whole atmospheric, yeah. Everybody knows everybody and everybody's got a secret. That kind of thing really appeals to me.
Yeah, I'm sure it was difficult and fun to write, like everything else that you have, you know, a passion for.
For sure.
So tell us about your journey to getting published, because you mentioned you have a backlist of things. So how did that journey go for you?
Well, I'm Canadian. I live in Canada, and I've been publishing here since 2012. So I sold my first book in 2011, and it came out a year later. And for my first five or six books, I was publishing in Canada without an agent, which is not unusual here.
Okay.
It's a smaller market, and you can work with an agent here, but you can also get published without representation a lot easier than you can in the States.
Yeah.
And so I was publishing here, and I had, you know, some Canadian success with my first few books, and that was great. But at a certain point, I started to feel like I would like to kind of broaden my horizons a little bit, and I decided that I wanted to find an agent. I wanted to start querying. So that was a very distinctive moment in my career where I kind of stepped back and said, do you know what? I want this to be a career. I want to do this, take this very seriously, and I need someone to help me out. I don't like looking at contracts. All that kind of stuff is kind of boring and a bit stressful for me. And, you know, I also wanted somebody to help me guide my career, help me find the best editors to work with, and, think about what projects might make the most sense for me as I build a brand. And so long story short, in 2015, 2016, I stepped away from what I had been doing and began to write Keep This to Yourself with the intention of kind of shifting what I'd been writing, which previous to this book was very straightforward contemporary YA. And I wanted to write something that was a bit more genre focused, and for me the most appealing type of genre is mystery, because I love mysteries and thrillers. I read them all the time. They're so much fun to read. And so it was a two-sided thing. I said to myself that I wanted to tackle a mystery and see if I could, you know, work out that logic puzzle and write a satisfying mystery thriller. And I also wanted to write a book that would, you know, hopefully make me appealing when I went out and started querying. And so I spent about a year and a half writing the book. I put everything else on hold. I really focused hard on writing the best book I could. And when it was done, I started querying, and, you know, quite quickly I had interest from a few agents, and I ended up signing with my agent, Eric Smith, in 2016. And then, you know, you have your agent and you think, okay, this is great, that was successful, but then you have to go out on submission.
Yeah.
But that was a whole other process where you're like, obviously it's not end of story when you get fine representation, then they have to help you find a home for your book.
Right.
And so we were on for about a year, and we got really close at a few different houses, and for various reasons, they didn't make it all the way through acquisitions. And then finally, Eliza Swift at Albert Whitman picked the book up. We submitted to her, and she really loved it, and she and I had a chat, and she had a vision for the book that was very in tune with what I wanted it. And the rest, I guess, is history. They took it on, and we had a fabulous time editing the book, making it stronger with every pass-through revisions, and yeah, it came out in May of this year.
I love it. I didn't know that about Canada, that it's a lot easier for people unagented to get things published. That's news to me, but I'm glad that you went through that journey to get your agent so we could have Keep This to Yourself, because it's such a good book.
Oh, that's kind of you.
Yeah. I mean, it has everything. You know, I very much love the mystery genre as well. I love that a lot of these kinds of stories too are set in Maine. Had you been to Maine before or lived there?
Well, I'm actually from Nova Scotia, which is very close to Maine.
Okay.
The book was written in Nova Scotia, like it was set in Nova Scotia. And when I signed it with an American publisher, they asked me if I would change it to Maine. So I didn't have to change anything at all.
Just the name.
The name of the city, Portland. And so it's, you know, in marketing and stuff, they say it's Maine. But honestly, it was kind of a made-up town in Nova Scotia that then just got shifted a little bit further down the Atlantic Seaboard. But, you know, Maine is, I have been to Maine. It's great. And it has a lot of, you know, there's a lot of sailing and really island communities. And that sort of rugged coastline is very similar to where I grew up. So cool. It's kind of a natural thing for me to write.
That's awesome. I just have noticed a lot of my, I feel like, favorite books and that are of this type and have that small town creepy thing going on are all set in Maine. I feel like I need to go there and see it all, see what inspires it all.
Even better, yeah, go to Maine and then keep up the coast and come to Nova Scotia, because it's a great place to visit.
Awesome. I will definitely, whenever I have the time and my children allow it, I will try and make that happen. So when you made that decision, you spent your year and a half writing Keep This to Yourself, and you are ready to start querying. Tell us how you approached that and what your, you know, thought process was as you wrote your query letter and the things you looked for as you went through.
Well, to be honest, I had been thinking about querying for a couple of years, and so I had done my research. I had a top 10 list of agents that I wanted to approach, and then I had a second list of 10 kind of second tier agents if the first 10 didn't work out, and then I had another list of, believe it or not, 25 agents that if the first two rounds didn't work out, I was going to do just kind of a mass mailing to whoever I could find. And I was fortunate in that one of the agents on my top 10 list, Eric Smith, was really into the book and had some great things to say about it and some great insights. But I spent a lot of time crafting my query letter.
Yeah.
And actually, if people are interested, you can check out Eric's website, because he has posted my query letter on there and a bit of a story about how he acquired me. And not to brag, but the query letter, I think I did a good enough job that they more or less used my query letter for the back copy of the book.
That's when you know you've done a good job, for sure.
I think so, yeah. And it was deliberate. Your query letter is really important. Obviously, the most important thing an editor or an agent is going to see when you're approaching them is your material, your written material. But a query is giving you so much insight into, or giving potential agents so much insight into you as a writer, as a person. How can you boil down an idea that is book length into a paragraph synopsis that is appealing and catches the interest? And so it can't be overstated how important it is to work on your query letter and make it as tight and as catchy as possible.
And I think that is something that can be a real struggle for people. I think I've always hated query letters and have had the hardest time doing them. But I also find, too, that like I wrote one for one book I did, and it didn't come naturally to me. It was super struggle. But then I used my query letter like as part of my revision for another book that I did. I like, okay, you know, wrote it out, and it kind of helped steer me a little bit to fix some things, which was an interesting thing I hadn't done before. But I feel like that turned out a lot better. So query letters.
I think you know, query letters, they force you to boil your story down into a few lines, and that's a good exercise. It's a good exercise to get used to, because something I've learned in my years writing and publishing is you meet people at parties, you meet people at bookstores, you meet people out at, you know, public events and all over the place who find out you're a writer and want to know about your book. And generally they don't want you to stand and give them a 35-minute description of what's going on. They want an elevator pitch, right? They want a few lines that hopefully you're making a sale, or you've met somebody who could be interested in your books and your future work. And so it's kind of a, you know, you have to practice, but there's kind of an art to figuring out what is the heart of my story and what are the parts of the story that I can quickly relay to somebody and hopefully interest them enough that they want to pick it up and read it.
Yeah, and I think a query letter too can help you identify, like, if your story really isn't where it needs to be, if you can't boil it down, if you can't figure out what is actually the most important things, like, oh, maybe there's something missing, or you need to, you know, go in and just make some changes so that it is more clear within your actual manuscript, which is hard to do at times.
Always, yeah, that's true.
So would you share with me any tips you have for writers who are in the midst of that querying process right now? I really like that you had, you know, your list of 10, your second list of 10, and list of 25. I think while the research part can make the querying process go so much longer, I think that it is super crucial to narrow down so you're not sending to like 100 agents who you wouldn't even really want to work with. But
oh my God, absolutely.
Yeah. But any tips you have for writers?
Right. Well, I think that's the most important one, is do your research. And a great way to do it is think of if you're writing in a certain genre and there are books that you love, relatively recent, current titles that you really like, start looking at the acknowledgements and find out, because, you know, 99% of the time, the writer will thank their agent in the acknowledgements. Yeah. So you find names there. And there are all sorts of great websites. Manuscript Wishlist is a great place to go and find agents and editors who are looking for specific types of books. And I actually use Manuscript Wishlist quite a bit. It's where I found Eric Smith, my agent.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like you say, you don't want to send out to 100 names just because they're agents. You want to find an agent who represents the kind of work that you do and has, you know, a good track record of selling projects. And you know, it's important. You want to work with somebody who can go out and take your book and represent it well, because they're going to be your first point of contact with potential editors and often lots of other people in the publishing industry that you're going to have to communicate with. So it's really important to take your time and make sure that you find the right people and that you find the right fit. And on the flip side of that, if you've queried a project and you start to hear from agents, it's really exciting. But it's also really important to take some time and talk to them and make sure that it's a good fit. Not every writer-agent relationship works perfectly. And so it's good to kind of try and figure that stuff out ahead of time before you sign to somebody just because you're excited that they're interested.
Yeah.
Take your time. Remember that it's your career and you want to do it you want to approach all of this seriously, thoughtfully, and, you know, with research and you know, patience the whole way.
Yes, which is, I found, at least for me, and I feel like I've connected with a lot of other writers who struggle with patience as well. I think in this industry, things are already so slow that, you know, when you get to that point where an agent's like, yeah, let's talk about it, see if we're a good fit, I feel like, you know, there's that urge to just be like, okay, do it, sign it, so that, you know, I've checked this one thing off my list. But in talking to agents, you know, I think that it's important to remember it is like a business relationship and a personal relationship. You need to spend some time interviewing them as well. You know, like they're basically interviewing you.
Yes. And I think that generally patience is, if you are entering the publishing industry and you're not a patient person, you are going to have to learn to be a patient person.
Yes.
Publishing operates at a glacial pace.
Yes.
And so, you know, just keep that in mind. Everything's going to happen slowly, and there's no point in rushing anything, especially, you know, when you get right down to it, your manuscript is the most important thing. And I have met people who have written you speak to a lot of people around NaNoWriMo, which I think is a wonderful, wonderful time of the year. So many people are encouraged to sit down and write their first book or get a project out of the way that they've been kind of simmering on the back burner. But what tends to happen is a lot of people write, especially with their first book, will finish a draft and say, okay, nailed it, time to start querying. I have a book-shaped thing. Now I can go find somewhere to sell it. I would highly encourage anyone who writes the first draft, especially of a first book, to take their time and put it away for a few weeks to a month, a couple months, and then go back to it with fresh eyes before you've shown it to anybody, and get as much revision out of the way as you can on your own before you start sending it out. Because you're in a much stronger, the stronger your manuscript is, the stronger your position is when you start to query and when you start to look for editorial interest. And, you know, like you said, it really does all boil down to patience. And it can be stressful when, you know, you see people out there making deals and maybe somebody sold a book that sounds like the one you're working on. You think, oh man, I really have to get mine out there right now. you know what I mean? And so patience all around.
Yes.
Work on patience, and it'll serve you well in the long run.
I think so. I think everybody in our world today just needs to learn patience, where we get everything so quickly. But yeah, it's definitely something I'm working on. I feel like I've gotten a little bit better at it, but you know, I'm sure it would be a lifelong struggle
for all of us.
Yes. So I think I saw something that you have another novel in the works or coming out. I think I saw a cover for it. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually have two books coming out next year.
Ooh, can you tell us about them?
Yes, I'm quite excited about both of them. One of them is a book that I wrote with my very close friend, Robin Stevenson, who is a wonderful writer and person from the West Coast of Canada. And my husband is in the Navy, and we've traveled from one coast to the other, lived in other cities in between.
Yeah.
And when I was living on the West Coast, Robin, who is a, you know, pretty well-known Canadian writer of Kid Lit, YA, right down through to picture books, she and I became friends. And when I moved back to the East Coast, she got in touch and said, you know, I miss our regular, we would go out regularly for coffee or a beer and just talk about writing, and we missed doing that with each other. And so she suggested that we should try writing a YA novel together. And so we did that. And it's coming out next year in the spring with Running Press, and it's called When You Get the Chance. And it's basically, it's a Robin and I are both gay, and it's an LGBTQ heavy story of two teenagers who are on their cousins, and they're on a road trip to the Toronto Pride Festival. And so we're really excited about this book. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to promote, and we both really like going out and talking to LGBTQ youth groups and school groups whenever we have the chance. And so this is a book that we've kind of written as a love letter to these kids around the world who are, you know, identify as LGBTQ+. And so that book comes out in, I believe, May of next year.
That's awesome.
And yeah, and it was so much fun to write with her. And it was also an interesting experience because I'm used to hiding in my office and writing all by myself.
Yeah.
And what we did with this one was I would write a chapter and send it to her, and she would write the next chapter and send it back to me.
Wow.
So there was always a bit of pressure off to send it away and forget about it, and then somebody would send it back to you. She would send it back to me, and it had progressed. It was a great way to write. And so we're happy we've done it, and we're really proud of the book. And then next fall, I have another mystery coming out with Robert Whitman, published Keep This to Yourself, and it is called called I Hope You're Listening, and it's the story of a 17-year-old girl named Dee, who is the originator of a top secret, it's not top secret, but she has a very successful, popular true crime podcast, and she is completely incognito. She disguises her voice when she records it, and it's designed to help people find, it's designed to help locate missing people. And the reason she started this podcast is because about 10 years previous, when she was a kid, she and her best friends were playing, she and her best friend, Sibby, were playing in the woods behind her house, and Sibby was abducted and has never been seen since. So she has guilt over having been there, but unable to kind of recognize who the kidnappers were. Yeah. And so she channels this survivor's guilt into this popular podcast, and so life is kind of going along, and all of a sudden another kid is abducted from the same neighborhood, and so it drags up all these things from the past and sets her off on trying to solve a mystery that's a lot closer to home than she would typically like. So that's called I Hope You're Listening, and it comes out next fall.
That they both sound amazing. I when you get the chance, I love just the surge of LGBTQ plus all that stuff. You know, I think that that's super crucial for, you know, kids and anybody, not even kids, adults, to read a, and, you know, identify something that about themselves in a book, and, you know that there's other people out there and all of that, which I just think is wonderful. You know, I have a couple of family members in that arena, and you know, I think that would have been really nice for them when they were growing up to have something like that and a lot more books to read. So that's super cool.
I mean, I was a teen. I'm in my 40s now, so I was a teen in the 90s and early to mid 90s, and there were no books for teens like me. And I was, you know, obviously closeted at that point. It was hard to be out in high school back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And I see, you know, things can still be quite difficult for people trying to, you know, struggling with identities and that aren't necessarily always accepted by their families or communities.
Yeah.
And having lots of books out there, which there are more and more every year, is really great. It helps people feel like they're not alone.
Definitely, which is, you know, I think a large part of reading. I think that's why I read so much as a kid. I struggled with mental health and things like that, and just reading and seeing, being lost in worlds, but also recognizing myself and characters is crucial. So to have that for any type of person, no matter what you're going through, I think is wonderful. So that's super exciting.
Yeah.
And then I Hope You're Listening sounds like another great mystery. So I can't wait to read that one, because I'm a sucker for those.
Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah. Well, cool. We'll have to keep our eye out, and I'll make sure to, you know, help champion those for you as we get closer to them coming out.
Amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about writing, the actual process of writing. What would you say is the hardest part of writing for you, and then the hardest part of being an author?
The hardest part of writing, I love writing, and I am very disciplined. When I'm working on a project, I work on it 6 days a week. I try to get 1,500 to 2,000 words a day, and I've taught myself tricks over the years that, you know, make that look not easy, but manageable.
Yeah.
So that's great, but it's never a cakewalk. And I personally find that the part, so I write in sort of a disjointed way. I know you're going to ask me about whether I'm a panther or a water.
Tell me.
I'll tell you more about that in a minute, but I will just say that I am very much a plotter, and so I tend to plot out ahead of time and then sit down and start to write, but I write in a disjointed way. I jump around between sections and chapters. I don't start at the beginning and write to the end.
Okay.
And so usually it goes really well for about 2/3 of the book. I get, you know, in bits and chunks and pieces, I start to assemble the manuscript. And then there's always a point when I've gotten about 2/3 of it, half to 2/3 written, when I sort of hit a moment where I have to start to pull them all together. And that's the part that I find the most complicated. I don't know if it's the hardest part, but it's definitely the part that is the most challenging for me as a writer.
Yeah.
And things tend to go really swiftly, and then all of a sudden they slow right down. And it takes me, you know, usually a couple of months to kind of push through that moment where I'm trying to take all these many different bits and pieces and connect them seamlessly. So that's the hardest part of writing. And the hardest part of being an author is we have so many opportunities these days to market ourselves, everything from podcasts like this one to online social media, meeting readers in public at events, bookstores, at events like BEA. And so it's all really great, but it can be very overwhelming to be trying to create a career as an author. You're carving out time to get the words down, which is obviously very important, but also trying to market as much as you can. And to be honest, it can be a bit overwhelming and really quite stressful to feel like you're never ever doing it enough, as if you should do more all the time. And I've kind of had, you know, with Keep This to Yourself as my most high profile book to this point, and it was a lot of fun to market it, but there came a point where I said, you know what, I'm doing as much as I can, and I'm still feeling a lot of stress about I'm not doing as much as I should be. And I don't think you could ever win that battle. I think that however much you do, you always end up feeling like you should be doing that much more. And so I've tried to be, you know, practice self-care when it comes to marketing emotions. I do as much as I can, but I give myself a break now. If social media is just too much in the moment, I try to step away from Twitter for a little while so that I have a bit of headspace
yes.
to kind of calm myself down a little bit. So yeah, it's always a struggle to kind of stay on top of that and find a balance between being out there, being present, being pushing your book, but also remembering that you need time and space to kind of, you know, exist in the world.
Yeah, I think that could definitely be challenging. Social media and all the other things you mentioned, the promotions and book tours and book cons and all that, that's a lot. I'm an extroverted person to a point, but I'm like an introverted or an extroverted introvert where I need like time to recover from all that socializing. I need to like sit in a room with nobody else and just not talk for a little bit to get my batteries recharged. So I can understand that for sure.
I'm exactly the same way. I love it when I'm in the middle of an event. I think it's great, but yeah. It takes a lot out of you. And afterwards you need to practice self-care, whether it's yoga or taking the dog for a walk or just, you know, turning off your computer, putting on some music and cooking a nice meal. You just need to have your life outside of the world, because it is a job that can, if you let it, take up every moment of your day, from the time you wake up and you check Twitter to the time you go to bed and you're posting a blog or whatever. It can take up a lot of space, and so it's important to carve out that space for outside pursuits and time with family and friends, you know.
For sure, because I mean, you know, I don't, my goal is maybe to write like 1,000 words a day, but sometimes that can still take me quite a big chunk of my day. So to do all that and do all the social media stuff that you're expected to do and, you know, be with your family and take care of yourself, ooh, that's a lot. So on the flip side of those questions, what is the best part of being a writer for you and the best part of being an author?
Okay, well, this is easy. I didn't even have to think about this one. I love being a writer because I love a well-crafted story, and I love making up stories. I love creating characters and imagining a scenario or a circumstance to drop them into and a world to build around them. And nothing is more satisfying to me than the craft of writing a well thought out story. I love it so much. I think about it all the time. I have ideas all the time. I have notebooks with me everywhere. And I feel so lucky to get to do it, because it really is something I've been, you know, thinking about since I was very, very small. Is, you know, everything from movies that I got obsessed with to obviously the books that I read voraciously as a kid, to be able to contribute my own stuff to the world is just an amazing privilege. And as far as being an author, a working author, the best thing is hearing from readers who love my books and respond to my books. Yeah. It's just nothing else, because I remember being, you know, I still am somebody who reads a lot and gets really into a particular title or a particular series, and really just sits back in admiration at writers who I've really responded to. And to be on the flip side where somebody comes to me and says, hey, I Keep This to Yourself and I loved it, it was so great and I didn't see the ending coming, it's just a great feeling. Really great feeling.
Yeah, I can imagine all your hard work paid off and somebody really connected with it. That does sound wonderful.
That's right.
That's why we all do it. Right? That's the goal. How do you handle reviews? Like, do you read your book reviews that are out online, or do you try and ignore them?
I read literally every review. We're
You
told to
do?
stay away from, oh my God, everything. And speaking of mental health, but like we were just talking about self-care, I know a lot of people who can't and shouldn't, don't, and that's great. And somehow I've managed to, I can take it all with a grain of salt. And I would say I'm very much in the minority of people who check out their own Goodreads reviews.
Yeah.
And I understand why people don't. But I personally have found that, there are always going to be negative ranking reviews. They can be hard to read sometimes, but I sort of ignore those. But the reviews that are enthusiastic but constructively critical have given me all sorts of insights into things that I can improve about my own writing. And I think that I've grown as a writer because I've listened to what people are saying. I don't engage. I never respond to people's Goodreads reviews.
Yes, that's
And
good.
maybe I'll get flack for saying this, but I appreciate anybody who reads my book and takes the time to say something good, bad, ugly, you name it.
Yeah.
And there are things, I'm not going to go into detail, but there are some things I've noticed about keep this to yourself, slightly small issues that people took with the book that didn't ruin the book for them at all. But I think there are a couple of things that I've started to say, you know what, I think that was not a bad point. And so moving forward into my next projects, I keep those things in mind. And yeah, that's my personal approach, and I know that I'm in the minority there.
I know I was gonna say, like, I don't know a lot of authors who do that, but I love that you're able to look at that and take the, constructive reviews and criticism from it and internalize it in a positive way to help yourself be a better writer. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it works for me.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about being a plotter. 'Cause you're not
Sure.
a pantser, you're not a planner. So have you always been a plotter? Have you known from, day one writing that that's what worked best for you?
My first book was not plotted, it was pantsed completely, and it turned out well. But I had to go back afterwards after I'd written my first draft, and I had to kind of smash it into some sort of
Yeah.
structure.
Yeah.
And with my next book, it was a very highly plotted young adult novel about four teenagers. It's called Tagalong, and it was four teens on prom night, and it was written in alternating chapters. And each of them is not going to the prom for various reasons, and their paths connected and crossed over the course of the night. And it was kind of an homage to the old John Hughes movies that I loved when I was young. I love movies with lots of characters that kind of take place over the course of the night, like Dazed and Confused and that sort of thing. And so I tried to write a book that followed that sort of pattern, but it involved a ton of structuring. So it was plotted right from the beginning. I was plotting it with index cards, the old-fashioned way. I would literally write out scenes and character descriptions on index cards and stick them to my wall.
That's the best way to do it. I love index cards.
I love them too. And then I discovered Scrivener, so I can do that same process
Yeah.
online. And I've never looked back. I always plot my books. I come up with a premise, and I find that plotting for me means I don't waste a lot of time. Writing, I can do a lot of the work in my head, and I take a long walk with my dog every morning, and that's when I start. I'm thinking through either the book I'm working on or a future book, and then I come back and jot down notes, and I take those notes and I bring them into Scrivener, and I start organizing my plot. And until the plot is really relatively tight, I don't start writing. And then once it's at a certain point, I mean, I give myself room to come up with surprises and for things to change always, because that's just how writing works. But I feel like a loose roadmap helps me so much. And it always kind of keeps me, my eyes on the prize, always understanding that if I can get through this scene, I can write that other scene that's going to be so much fun to write. And yeah, so I love plotting. It works really well for me. And I actually find, I speak to people who write amazing books that they tell me that they were pantsed, and I just, I'm in awe of people like that because I can't imagine working that way myself.
I was a pantser at one time and wrote a whole book by pantsing, and I had to do the same thing at the end. I had to like mush it together and like really hardcore revise it at the end because there was plot holes everywhere. Things didn't make sense in places because sometimes you got to write stuff down and remember all the details of stuff. So I definitely would say I'm more of a plotter at this point too. I'm not a hardcore outliner, outlining every single thing, but I feel like too with the mystery genre, and like the book I recently finished was a YA mystery, and I just had a lot more things and clues and victims and all that to keep track of. So it makes sense that you got to put a little bit more thought into it to remember those things for yourself. But I like it. I like to know how different people write, and I applaud people who pants always too, because it's very freeing and fun to write that way. But yeah, it's a little bit more work on the back end, after you finish that first draft.
I've met a few people over the years who claim, I mean, I find it almost unbelievable, but they claim to pants, but in a really straightforward way, where they sit down and they start writing the book and they just write it till it's done, and then that's the book. And that, I find that's basically magic to me. I don't know how anyone could do that. I admire it so much. I think it's next level.
Yes, I think
Jedi skills.
Yeah, Jedi writing skills for sure. Let them do that, because if they can, like, you gotta take advantage of that magic. Mm-hmm. So tell us how your love of writing started.
Well, I think I'm like a lot of people, right? I read a lot. I was a kid in the country. I grew up in rural Nova Scotia on an island called Cape Breton. And I had three brothers and no neighbor kids. And we didn't really have TV. I mean, we had an old TV, but we didn't have cable of any kind. Mm-hmm. And all four of us read all the time. And when we weren't reading, we were playing outside, making up stories. And I knew from a very young age that writing books to me was the ultimate career. And I did study English literature at the university, but by that point I had any ideas becoming a full-time writer were, you know, back of my mind here at all. But I did continue to pursue my love of reading. And then at some point I joined the film industry because I had been thinking about telling stories for a living, and I thought that was a way to make a few bucks, actually make a living. And you know, I've always loved books and I've loved stories, and so I think when everything in my life kind of fell into place and pointed towards the opportunity to start writing books, I jumped at it, and it was a really natural thing for me. I think anybody who knows me or knew me when I was just young would not be surprised to know that I ended up writing. Books were the most important thing for me and have been my whole life.
I do think your answer is one that I hear frequently to this question. You know, I read a lot as a kid and, you know, loved. That's the same. If somebody asked me this question, I would answer it the same way. I was always reading. I was the kind of kid who brought a book to a party just in case things got boring and I needed something to do, you know? So I think that just shows how crucial reading is, like at a young age, to get an imagination going. I love watching my kids. They're not super good readers yet, but they'll sit there and like make up their own story based on what they see and what they can kind of pick out, which is super exciting to see. I'm like, okay, guys, now you're going to be writers when you grow up.
Yeah, it's amazing. I have lots of nieces and nephews, and we try to push books at them. Yes. And all opportunities, and a few of them have really gotten into reading, and they're all, the oldest is just about 5, so they're all quite young, but it's the same thing. You see them sitting and engaging with the pictures in a book before they can quite read, and they're creating stories in front of you, and it's just such a, I think it's a really primal human instinct to create stories out of the world. And so,
I think so too.
Yeah, I agree. Young people reading is one of my, seeing a young person with a book, nothing makes me happier than that.
Oh, I know. And I, you know, I get a lot of arcs of books that are on my phone now. So I try and give people benefit of the doubt. Sometimes I'll like, okay, maybe that teenager is actually reading a book on their Kindle app or something on their phone and not, you know, texting or whatever. But I do that. I, you know, love that we can now take books with us wherever we go. And it's, although I love a good book in your hands, because you can never, it's not the same, but, you know, it makes it so much easier to read when it's really accessible to you and you can carry it around you in your pocket.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay, my next question is about revision, which I think is, you know, I like to just hear how different people approach the topic, because I think there's so many different things that could work and work for different people. But what does your revision process look like? And, you know, with maybe reference to keep this to yourself as you were getting it prepared to query, and what did you make sure to do to have it be the best it could be?
Well, something I've noticed about my writing as I've, with every new book, is that I think every first draft is a bit tighter than my previous first draft. So the draft for Keep This to Yourself was relatively tight, and then the draft for my next book, which I wrote with Robin Stevenson, was tighter than that. And the draft, first draft for I Hope You're Listening, which comes out next fall, was even tighter. And I think that's just because you pick up tricks as you're going, and you start to realize, you see some things in your own process that just kind of become second nature.
Yeah.
That said, every first draft is pretty rough, and at that point, once I have a first draft, I tend to put it away for about a month, work on something else completely. Maybe I'm editing another project that's already in the publishing pipeline, and when I go back to it, that's when I start to have, you know, a lot of fun. I like drafting. I like first drafts, but I also really love revising, where I take the raw material that is the first draft and I start to make it sing. Like, I do everything I can to make it, you know, to tighten it where necessary, to enhance characters that might not be as fleshed out in the first draft as I would like.
Yeah.
I usually do a lot of world building in my second run through when I'm revising. And, you know, for me, writing is always a process. Every time I write, even when the first time I've sat down to write the first chapter of a new book, I'm revising as I go. You know, I read a little bit of what I wrote yesterday and I make a couple of changes and then I jump back in. So revising kind of happens throughout the process. And I also really love, once I've sold it to an editor and I'm working with a publishing house, working on revisions with an editor is a whole new thing that I just, you know, I love when that new voice, that new set of eyes comes into the process. I love it so much. And I've been really fortunate. I've worked with some great editors and people who, you know, really invested themselves in my books. And I think it's a wonderful thing. I just love that part of the process as well. So all around, I think revising is great. I want my book to be as tight and as polished as can be. So, you know, revising happens at different stages, and each one of them is an opportunity to make it better.
For sure. I think that's a good perspective on it, because I think revising can feel very, don't know the right word, but just probably not the most fun thing for people to do. I think a lot of people look at it and they're like, ugh, I have to revise this and, you know, go through it again. But I love to see how it changes as you revise, and, you know, realizing that it's getting closer to what it needs to be, and you know, your characters get a little bit more defined and things work out. And I like the revision process too, cleaning it up and making it a little shinier.
It's liberating.
Yeah, it is. So my last question for you is my favorite question. I know that we all have large piles of books that we want to read, so I like to add to my pile. But my question for you is, what is your favorite book right now? This is not your favorite book of all time, just a book you've read recently that you really enjoyed.
Okay, I'm going to cheat and give you two answers.
Perfect.
And so I love this question too, and I'm glad that you gave me a heads up. I've been asked this in interviews, and on the spot, it's so hard.
So hard.
Read a lot. And I, you know, I love different things for different reasons. So there's a YA series that I've been kind of obsessed with, and I just read the second of this trilogy, and the third one comes out next year, and I can't wait. And it's the Truly Devious series by Maureen Johnson.
Nice.
They're so good. They're a mystery set at a boarding school in Vermont, rural Vermont, and there was a mystery that took place in the 30s, the 1930s, and now it's the present day, and some students, in particular the student Stevie Bell, she gets caught up in a present day mystery that is, it's starting to become clear that it's tied to the mystery from the past. And
I love it.
I cannot say enough about these books. I love them so much. The first one is called Truly Devious, and the second one is called The Vanishing Stair. It just came out, And the third one, I cannot remember what the third one is called, but it's coming in January, so we don't have that much longer to wait.
Ooh, nice.
That said, if anybody out there has an arc, I would love to read the third one if possible. Yeah, so those are great as far as YA, and I read a ton of YA. I could give you lists of things,
but sure. As
far as my favorite right now, I think it's the anticipation of the next book that, you know, kind of pushes it into the favorite slot. I just, you know, there's nothing better than a series when you're not quite to the end, but things are starting to culminate, and you have that anticipation of that next book or that final book, and that's where I am with the Truly Devious series by Maureen Johnson. And as far as something that I've read recently that I really love in adult fiction is I read a book called Black Rabbit Hall by Eve Chase, I think is her name. It's a British, again, it's a multi-generational mystery that takes place at a big old country house in England, and really hit all my sweet spots. I love mysteries that take place over different time periods, jumping back and forth, and I love creepy old houses, and I just finished it a little while ago. I really enjoyed it, so it's still on my mind.
Awesome. Those both sound like right up my alley. I'll have to add them to my list.
Recommend them for sure.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for chatting with me today and letting the listeners get to know you and telling us about your two books that are coming out in 2020.
It was so much fun. Thanks a lot for having me on. I love talking about books. I love talking about my writing process, and it was just a real thrill. So thanks a lot, Rose.
Of course. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you learned something or got something out of that wonderful interview with Tom, and make sure to keep your eye out for his books that are coming out later this year, and put Keep This to Yourself on your list and show him some love on social media. And as always, please rate, review, and share this podcast so that everybody can listen to it and learn from it and, you know, read all these wonderful books that we get to hear about on the podcast. See you next time.